Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the Hip Hop Saved My Life podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Now sit back, because it's time for the podcast.
Okay, welcome to... Oh, Jesus, that was so loud.
I like it.
Welcome to Hip Hop Saved My Life.
Louder.
Welcome to Hip Hop Saved My Life inside the raid. We're in the room.
We're back.
We're back in the room.
Not sure what number episode this is, but we could just say one, two.
What I can tell you, it's one of the last ones we'll ever do.
For the record, we've had two records since we've been back, and it's already going that way.
It's really, really, you know, the whole time we were doing it on Zoom, we were like, oh, maybe it's because we're doing it online that
there's
the
no
chemistry
connection.
Feels dog shit. But no, we've been back in the room now, and it turns out the whole thing's just fucked.
You just wanted to confirm the chemistry is just slipping away.
I just love this how we're starting. That's what I love.
We are delighted to be joined by the hottest new, self-described, the hottest new boy band in the world right now, I think.
Pretty much.
The Locket, who are comprised of Barney Artist, friend of the podcast, and Mr. Jukes, soon to be friend of the podcast.
Yeah.
We literally just met.
Future friend.
Yeah, future friend.
Okay, we vibe with it. Open your mind with it. Hoping your people understand and they find spirit. Remember people asking me if I would write lyrics. Oh, well, most would fail with the mic in it. Might kill it. Barney with the hat finish. Never shy with it. No L's. See your brother come and shine with it. Oh, hell. If they want to come and try, rip it coattails. I ain't even going to lie with it. When I'm on the mic killing, going to have to find minutes. I've been going high with it. Yeah, I'm going to find mimics then. Kill the mood and feel the force. Steal the door, cry for milk. Then we spill some more tea, drink down.
How are you guys?
Good. It's hey. It's weird to be doing stuff in person now, I suppose.
Yeah.
That's quite new.
Mm. Is this your first podcast as the new outfit?
Yeah, as the better band. Yeah. You know, Jack's finally left Bombay Bicycle Club.
Yeah, so what's happened with that, Jack? What's the deal with that?
They didn't like the beats I was making.
Shit. When did you find that out?
We made for a performance.
Yeah.
They walked up.
Yeah. Well, actually, during a gig, you just put it on and they're like, what the fuck is this?
You realise that they unplugged the speakers.
Why are you playing Wu-Tang beats? We're an indie band. Stop. Put the MPC down.
Barney actually did a very good impression of me the other day.
Yeah, I do. I've got the indie thing on. Basically, I might as well start it. Basically, the aim is to become the front man of Bombay. So the aim was to
that's
get
your
rid
aim.
Of,
for your,
that's
for you.
Yeah, Bombay Bicycle Club. The aim is to take Jack away and then me to front it, because I do feel like diversity-wise, it would be great for a black guy to head an indie band.
You can't just put Bombay in the name and then that's your diversity taken care of. Do you know what I mean?
Fair
false
enough.
Advertising.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, a lot of the Asian community got very excited about a band called Bombay Bicycle Club emerging. Then we saw the lineup and what the fuck is this?
The whitest looking people possible. Walk
out. Doesn't get much paler than me.
How are you? They're like, what the fuck is this?
Just the Southall gig has sold out. I don't know.
These guys are doing it during Diwali. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, these
things. Open up your mind.
So how did it come about, you two getting together then? What's the story?
I was actually just a fan of Barney's, and on my last record I asked him to come and do a verse.
Right.
And got him to the studio and we just hit it off, really.
Yeah, rom-com vibes.
Is it nervous when you first get into a studio together? Because obviously, you know, you've said for the purposes of the podcast that you're a fan. But then when you're actually in the room together... You don't know what the chemistry is going to be like. Right?
Barney's very good at those situations. He tends to fill the silences with a lot of noise.
Yeah.
And I'm the opposite. So
I've always thought that'd be a good tagline for you, silence filler. Do you know what I mean? Like that.
Good name for a tune.
That's the name of the next album.
Yeah. I'd love to see a video of our first meeting.
Oh yeah, it was just. Well, I'm like, obviously, like, I I got the call from, I was working in a jean shop. It's my first year out of retail, which is exciting. And so then they get a call and being like, oh, this guy called Jack Steadman wants to come for a session. And I was like, he's part of a Bombay Bicycle Club band. And I was like, what the fuck's a Bombay Bicycle Club? I was like, then I did the Googles. Then I looked at my paycheck and I was like, oh, this might be the time to run out. And then, we had a session and it was great. And I think it was just not, like, I think studio sessions always can be really awkward. You have to understand, it's like the most, making music, people, studios aren't fun. Like, it's very, it's like having sex, pretty much. It's really awkward. And you might go to jail. And it's...
Real insight. Yeah,
yeah, sex line. The mask slip there.
No, but also, like, I think, like, you have to feel really comfortable. And a lot of the time, like, you're meeting somebody for the first time and you've got to say lyrics or sing or whatever it is to be judged.
You've got to tell someone that what they're doing isn't that great. Sometimes,
like, within, but just within 10 minutes.
But you do got to phrase it in the perfect way.
You do a bit of small chat first.
No? Yeah.
Yeah.
Small chat. I've never heard it referred to that.
Small chat.
Small talk. I like it.
It's what most people
no, I like
say.
Small chat.
Small chat.
That's another tune. Small chat.
So did you have to say? Did you have to do that, Jack?
From the start, I've just been criticizing Barney.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a good dynamic.
I mean, it works.
I think it works.
How do you? If Barney had done something that you didn't like, can you just? How would you express that to him?
He doesn't look at me.
A klaxon sound.
There's no eye contact.
As a bell, and just rings the bell. Oh, right. Yeah, and someone takes me away.
There's like one of those like toy like little. Animals or something that does talking instead of me.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so you've got this like, what's it called?
Exactly, a puppet. Yeah. Yeah.
Is that the technical jargon you're struggling with?
Ventriloquist.
I believe in the industry they call them puppets, Jack.
Everyone's struggling with words today.
That's communist. You're like, what are those things that those people...
You put your hand inside it and you sort of open your hand and the mouth moves. What are those things called?
I haven't really spoken in like a year and a half.
No, I totally get it, man. Yeah. I totally get it.
You've got to refer to it. I've got to speak to that in the eyes. I've got to speak to that. So don't talk to me. Speak to the puppet.
So were you a hip-hop fan, Jack? Were you just happened to be a Barney fan?
No, I was a hip-hop fan.
Right.
I got into... I started playing jazz at school and then got into like the roots from that, and then that was kind of like a rabbit hole.
Yeah, that's a good route in. It wasn't meant to be that, but thank you. Barney, you came and did the live show for us.
Yeah,
back in the day.
And you were unbelievable.
Yeah. Oh, thank you guys.
Like, you were sometimes like when. When you have like charity comedy gigs and stuff like that, there's always like one act that maybe people didn't know as well as some of the other ones or whatever, but they are the ones that everyone's talking about where after the gig. I felt like that was you, that you had that spot because like you properly delivered a show. It was great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And you got them off their seats. Remember, there's a lot of people just sat down watching live music and
That's like
got
death.
Them hyped up.
Do you know what I'm saying? I think like the worst possible thing for like a rapper or a musician is like people sitting down.
Yeah.
Not judging you guys, but yeah, that is a fucking shit time.
That was bad.
Set up for a show.
Yeah. What we like to do is one of the things that we do when we put on live events.
See how you
is to make it as difficult as possible for people that have agreed to perform.
We were thinking of blindfolding.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And just in case you're thinking, well, you're getting paid for it. No, you're not. We ask people to come perform for nothing as a charity favor.
Do I get a mic? Oh, all right, cool. You might as well get a mic back.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Your Majesty.
Ooh, speakers. Oh, all right. I had a great time. I think it was, I think with me and like live shows, I really enjoy the idea of interacting with different types of people. I think if you do a good live show, it should work for everyone, not just specifically hip hop fans or whatever. And I think like rap is, like, I love it with all my heart, but it is a very awkward thing to do. Like saying that you're a rapper is like one of the most awkward things you could possibly say.
You think
awkward than a comedian?
Yeah.
Do you reckon?
You know why? They'll be like, you're a comedian. And go, oh, tell us a joke.
Yeah. That's annoying. That's
you're a rapper.
Annoying,
rap fast.
Do people say that?
Really?
What? And I'm black. Of course they do.
They
that's
say
like
rap.
The first.
Yeah. They say that before you say you're a rapper.
Go, oh, he must be born. Like, chop me a basketball. Do you get what I'm saying? One of the two. So that's really awkward because one, like, a good joke is a good joke, regardless of whatever.
Right.
A good rap, it doesn't. If you like rap, then you understand what a good rap is and a bad rap is.
Yeah.
So I could say Bat Hat Cat, and they'd be like, "Oh my God, he's Jay-Z." You know what I'm saying? So that's a bit awkward. But no, I really enjoyed that night, and I think I've done so many terrible shows in my life that I'm prepared for like bigger shows that are but of a more awkward situation because I've done it so many times.
So what is the deal with the locket then? So what's the, what's kind of, is there like a
concept?
Thank you.
Is that what you're gonna say?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. What is the concept? Is there a concept? What's the deal?
Yeah, I think there's a concept. I think so basically me and Jack kind of obviously met for doing the God First thing like years ago. Mm. And we just became really good friends. We didn't make any music for like a couple years. Right. And then one time we were chilling and it was like, oh yeah, we should probably do that music thing that we do. So, oh yeah, cool. So we jumped in the studio and we started building. And then basically like Bombay came back. They did a reunion tour.
Yeah.
And then basically like they were supposed to go and do festivals during lockdown.
Right.
But then lockdown happened.
Right.
So then we kind of was like, oh, we should kind of get back in the studio and make this album. And yeah, I think the album kind of like, the aim is, you know, we had a lot of conversations about J Dilla and Tribe Called Quest and like that 90s kind of feeling vibe. And how
which you don't hear so much anymore.
Yeah, exactly. That we love. You know, I suppose with London Sensibilities. And yeah, we kind of made this album kind of like a bit of that positivity, and the idea of it being called The Locket is the idea of putting like memories. You know, when you have a locket, you put memories in there, and I think that is kind of like a real capsule of our lockdown experience. So yeah.
Right. And so, Jack, what do you think? Are you expecting Bombay Bicycle Club fans to come to this record?
I think Bombay Bicycle Club fans have come to Mr. Jukes, who have now come to this.
Right, for sure.
Because it was already quite an eclectic thing.
Yeah.
And been making music by myself this whole time, just not really officially. So
right.
They were like, yeah, they're like the production nerds that seem to...
Do your management shit themselves when you sort of like switch genres or like become eclectic like that?
I hope not.
Wait for the reggae album.
Find out.
Yeah.
I'm sing like Sting.
Yeah, Jack, listen. Yeah. Listen, I don't mind doing this, but you know, I think the wig's a bit much, right?
Put the spliff down.
And take off that T-shirt with Bob Marley on it.
In a string vest.
And so, well, it's an interesting thing for two. I think it's always going to be interesting when two people from such kind of differing kind of starting points come together and make stuff together. Was it difficult for you to? I know that you were talking about, you know, the 90s sound and that sort of, I guess, for want of a better word, like that sort of purist kind of way of doing it. Was it difficult for you guys to arrive at what you thought the locket was going to sound like, or did you have similar views on it? How did that come together?
I think like a lot of records, it came at the end when you kind of look back and realize what you've done.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird to sit at the beginning of a project and say, What's the album going to be called and what's it going to be about?
Yeah.
These things happen organically, which is always better.
Were there any disagreements?
Yeah.
I mean, we're like, it's weird that we get on because you couldn't get two more different people.
Literally, yeah. Well, I said like one of, like we did a video called Fight for Vibrate, it's one of our singles, and I said like, it looks like Jack's like a supply teacher taking a bad student on a
I just really feel like this is a great way of connecting with him.
With the youth?
Yeah.
Like, with the hip hop. Yeah. I want to take him away. Like, yeah. I want to...
Yeah. And I think actually that will give him an interest in geography.
He'll really be into it. I really feel like...
I was looking for gold until my mind got stolen. Bars are swollen, here comes the omen. Seeing how they move. Industry politics, be careful what you do. They've been keeping what they're stealing from the truth. Every time you move, they want you to lose. Ain't a game player, just a game slayer. My prayer's always been clear, I'm keeping some in the air. Moving like some stick up kids, the mission sick. Magicians, how they flip those tricks. Disappear in a flash with all the cash money. Little Wayne going bad. This is a handbook for the damn crooks. Go find what man took, the time is now, look. If you wanna fish for the prize, keep your eyes on the hook.
Do you guys both like the same type of hip-hop then? So like,
yeah.
What sort of stuff, what about...
I think you've got a broader, like, I think mine's quite narrow.
So what are you into then, Jack?
It's that kind of 90s, especially East Coast.
Right.
And I always grew up listening to hip-hop from a production point of view, because just that's what I did. And so like, it's like the bass player only listening to the bass player in the band.
Yeah.
So yeah, J Dilla, Madlib, Tribe Called Quest. And just honestly listening to the beats and digging the samples that they were using and finding the records and buying those as well.
Coming at it from a different genre of music, because one of the things we did this crossover with the horn section, didn't we? And so the bassist from the horn sections did this game with us where he started playing riffs from different hip-hop tunes and we had to identify them. I mean, at one point he said, he wasn't trying to be insulting, but like he'd been playing for about 30 seconds And then I said, "Is that all of it?" And he goes, "Yeah, it's a hip hop song. This is all it does." Do you know what I mean? Like he didn't mean it. He didn't mean it in an insulting way. Mm. But what he was saying was, "You've heard that
you should
loop
know it as well."
Yeah. But you've heard this loop, and now this is all production wise. This song is going to do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is different from a lot of genres. Like, do you sort of take to hip hop production coming at it from a different kind of a different point
of view? It's funny because the other day I was in the car with my girlfriend, and we found all these old CDs that I'd made her when we met when we were at school.
Nice.
And one of them was called Instrumental Hip Hop.
Amazing.
You really didn't want to have sex.
I love this.
We were listening to it and we just both realised how boring it is.
Right. Like, yeah.
We were like, yeah, that needs an MC on it. At the time, I was just such a nerd about it. I was like, oh, yeah, like 4 minutes of the same loop.
Oh, yeah.
Mate, back then, was she politely accepting the CD okay. gift?
No, this is really really nice.
90 minutes later.
I really love the snare on that.
What would be worse is if you'd have gone, this needs some bars on it, and then started to play
it. My name is Jack.
Just on the last
waiting for a
tape to show my feelings.
The monologue at the end.
I had it all prepared. I was just, she never asked us.
Exactly. She never got
ready. So, no, yeah. Okay, no.
Threw my notebook away.
No, but I remember having that, because you do go through that. You must have gone through that as well, Barney, where you sort of get so nerdy about it, right? And you sort of, I remember, like, I used to buy, like, you know, the Scratch Pickles. I used to buy, like, their practice tapes, and it'd just be like a beat and Q-Bert scratching over the top of it. And I remember, like, listening to it for about a minute. I think it's like Hot Sauce in the Dick Hole was the name of the tape, right? And I was listening to it for about a minute, and I was like, what the fuck am I doing?
But you've got it. That's like, all that matters, isn't it? Yeah.
It's like, yeah, this is, he's good at what he does, but I don't want, it's like watching a really great juggler. I don't want, this is not.
I watched an hour of juggling. Like, do you know what I'm saying? I don't want to watch an hour of somebody throwing
I need the rest of Cirque du Soleil for this to be a show. Do you know what I mean?
My interest into hip hop wasn't like the stereotypical kind of, you know, oh, I'm listening to Nas at the age of 9 years old. Like I started rapping at like 18.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? It's like 10 years ago. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, and it was a full on accident. I do not have the personality type for a rapper. That's why my name's Barney.
You don't think so?
No, unfortunately. Sometimes, no. No.
Because what? Because you don't take yourself seriously enough? Is that what
That's what I do. Fuck you. It's number one. Number two. No, I'm joking.
It's the first time anyone's told Ramesh to say.
So I've been rapping in there.
Yeah, that's good. No, I liked it. I liked it. Finally, this guy looks like a fucking rapper. Finally pulled a second out of his ass. I'm actually looking like the
now
real
deal. Now he's laughing.
Now he's got a grill in. He's got a chain on. With the champagne. No. I was like in the household, like my mum was playing like ABBA, and I was listening to like S Club 7 and stuff.
Yeah,
and
ABBA are good though, right?
Well, apparently I'm getting bored.
What?
No, so this is the thing. It's like I didn't know this, but apparently ABBA aren't good. As in, you don't go, oh, like I listen
like
to ABBA
music,
people.
You mean?
No, as in, like, it's corny.
This is a very strange conversation.
Yeah, hip hop saved my life.
Hold on. But people do think ABBA are corny. But what I'm talking about is the actual songs are like quite catchy, right? I mean, for what it's supposed to do. Mm. It's like, you know, it's like a wrench, like a really good wrench. Like, it's not exciting. It's not cool. I wouldn't bring it out at a party, but it does the job effectively. It does what it's supposed to do very effectively.
Well, that's
right?
Exactly how I feel, but I don't think, I do think it's really cool, and I do think it's, that's the issue.
You think it's really cool?
I thought it was like.
Oh, sorry. I thought,
You've got a framed wrench on
your literally just wrench on my, that's what I do. No, so I didn't know, and then,
that was like your Tame Impala.
That was my Tame Impala. That was my off the wall, do you get what I'm saying? Like, Terrence Martin.
Have you heard of, listen, just allow me to blow your mind for a second. Have you heard of ABBA?
Hey, jazz man, let me have a catch up with you. Have you heard of the 1980s cut?
So you thought S Club and ABBA were cool?
But they're amazing.
And then what brought you out of that?
So, so my best friend is a guy called Alpha Mist. He's a jazz musician now, and basically he's like those annoying people that were at school that are like good at everything,
right?
Good at football, spoke to girls, they liked him, and I was the opposite.
Yeah.
And so. Basically, when Alpha was 17, he was playing professional football, about to sign a contract to play professional football.
Yeah.
And his mum was like, you got to go to college. And he was like, okay, whatever. I went to college, met this girl, and the girl wanted to do Ordinary People by John Legend.
Right.
And so he just learned how to play piano from that, just taught himself. And then from there, learn about jazz. From there, becomes like he's one of the biggest jazz musicians in the country. Anyway, the reason I'm bringing that is because he started making jazz hip hop beats, and I never heard those kind of things before. And so then from there, I started rapping, and I was really, really awful, like for a very long time. But I kind of fell in love with the story.
Did you feel like you're awful at the time? No, you can't have done.
Yeah, you know why? Have you ever like rap like? You know, you like a stand-up show and you're doing a show and you think like, these jokes are going to knock and they just don't bang.
Yeah.
It's like that. But imagine the person's like right opposite you and they're your friend. And you're going, these bars are great. And like, then no one's reacting to them.
The difficulty when you start off with anything like this is that your taste, your opinion of what's good is up here, is really high up. But your ability to deliver that is so low because you don't have the skill set. Right?
You got the ambition.
So you got the ambition. So the frustration of that disparity, I found very difficult when I started doing stand-up.
It's time, isn't it?
I knew what I thought was excellent, and I knew what I wanted to strive for, and then I'd go and try and do that,
so
and
in
it
your
was
head,
so
you're
far away.
The crowd's going to go mad.
But are you? But when you're doing the jokes at home, like in the mirror, I don't
know
how.
It's a big gig.
I don't know. I don't know how stand-ups do it. Do you guys practice in the mirror? How does it work?
You know what? Most stand-ups don't, but. In the last, maybe like a year and a half ago, I bought a mic stand.
Did you?
Like Usher.
I wouldn't do it in the mirror.
This joke's gonna kill it. You got it.
He's a very physical
comedian.
I practice like my eyebrow raise, pulling out the boiled egg from the briefcase.
He really wants to be like Lee Evans, like running around the house, but I have to get stage fright.
But the truth is, obviously, the problem with stand up is if you practice it without an audience, it's not actually comedy. Do you know what I mean? But because I don't write my jokes word for word, I just write ideas. So actually, I can get to a point where I've said them out loud before having to do that in front of an audience. So I realised I didn't really like trying to work out the wording of it in front of a crowd. So I started trying to... I'll be honest with you, I've only done it a couple of times because it
I'm into this.
That sounds good.
You become very self-conscious, but you just sort of try and talk out the idea as if you're at a gig. In my garage, basically, is the idea. But
do you film it as well?
I haven't got to that. I haven't got to that level of being able to distance myself from my self-consciousness to do that.
But surely other comedians must. I think no one
I've never heard that.
But they just can't speak about it. But I think they must. Like, you can't just like go on stage and just work it out there. You must do some.
Well, you do work it out, but there's certain things that you do have to add that you have to watch what you're doing. Yeah. So, for example. Without getting too sort of nerdy about it, there's timing issues. Mm. Like, you know, a second's pause can make or break a joke, right? But also it's what your face is doing and stuff like that. And those are the type of things that you don't know. Like, I remember like when I just did like the tour that I'm about to start up again, I was doing warm-ups in really small rooms, right? And there's a bit where I'm just completely silent. I'm just a mime in the show. Like I'm just sort of miming this thing. And I was doing it in really tiny rooms. And then the first time I did the first tour show, it was in a much bigger room.
Can't see it.
And I did the mime. Yeah. And it was getting fuck all. Yeah. And I realised, what am I doing, man? Yeah. Like, I did this yesterday in a 75-seater. I'm in the Apollo now. Like, no wonder people right at the back aren't getting this. You know what I mean? So it's that sort of thing of, you have to be aware in a way that I hadn't realised. It's not just about the jokes. It's about how you, like...
Well, that's the thing. And I think, like, even, like, for musicians, like, for me, like, when I do shows, like, so even with the show that I did for you lot, like, that's a well... I think we spoke about it. It's, like, it's very much similar to stand-up in terms of I know all the moves. Like, I know if I say that there, they're going to move that way if they do that. And so I approach it in that capacity. So when you come to a show... You don't realise, but it's all been mapped out in terms of its peaks and its valleys. Do you know
have wiggle room in there, like you'll do stuff in the room.
So like there's a bit like on my last tour where I'd be like, something anybody's birthday or whatever. And I'm right up on stage and then we do a bit that my band knows is gonna happen, but it's always a random person every night.
Right.
But we give them parameters of like we know what's gonna kinda happen in that space. And I think like especially in hip hop, like a lot of we're gonna talk about it later, but I think a lot of rap shows are awful because you know, I think the hard work bit isn't necessarily just
the rehearsal,
rapping. It's the knowing the moves and
but
knowing
you want to get so familiar with what you're doing that you can improvise, right?
It's a bit
like when you're soloing or something. Mm. You need to be really good at theory, but so good that you can forget everything.
Exactly.
Otherwise, it's quite boring.
Yeah.
So if you're comfortable, it allows you to do things off the cuff.
It's like driving a car, innit? The idea I always think like it's like. The more comfortable you are on stage, the more comfortable you're going to get people to do random things. One of the rookie mistakes I did was like first starting out, it's like telling everyone to put their hands in the air in the first song. It's like, right. No one's gonna, that's weird. It's awkward. Everyone feels self-conscious.
Yeah.
You have to kind of work up to that point.
You have to kind of earn that.
Exactly. And they don't even realize what's happening. And by the end of it, they're dancing and they're moving. And I think that's where it's.
This is the thing that I could never do with Bombay. Like, we'd play, you know, shows like Ali Pali and Earl's Court, and you're expected to do what you're so good at in between songs. And like, when words come out of my mouth, they're in the wrong order. And stuff.
Right.
Like, the music's fine, but I always was so terrified of talking.
That has a charm to it, though, doesn't it, as well?
In small venues, it does. It's very difficult at big festivals, because you do need, I mean, I could admit, you do need a bit of sort of stuff in between to get
people.
Did you try and
start doing that?
Hands in the air was about as far as I got.
Straight away.
And it sounded so insincere.
Everybody, please, someone...
Check my notes. I mean, if it isn't too much trouble, I do feel that you'll get more out of this experience if you did raise your hands aloft.
And it'd be good for me as well.
Yeah. Actually, do you know what? I'm just going to get... I think it's easier if this puppet tells you.
Mr. Wiggles?
He's so...
We're all fucking hands in the air.
He's terrifying.
Great idea. Yeah. I think Mr. Wiggles might actually be racist.
Yeah. Right? Mr. Wiggles is like really aggressive. Like,
oh my
like,
God.
Got like the deepest fucking hell.
Yeah. Jack, I think that might be how you see black people.
Where's that black guy, Barney? We're fucking
oh my God.
Jesus.
So, okay, so are both of you into jazz then?
Yeah, I wouldn't be like, I don't know so much about it, but a lot of my friendship groups are. Like
and you're a big jazz fan, eh?
That's kind of, I started playing music that way, yeah.
Right. So I'm about to sort of almost offend you, I would say. So just be prepared for this, right? So I've always wanted to like jazz more than I actually do, is the truth of it, right? I understand its qualities, and I understand, and look, I've gone to jazz clubs with my wife and stuff when I was trying to, you know, similar sort of instrumental hip hop flex. So I'm trying to impress her. And like, sitting in a jazz club is fucking great, right? Like, I think it's amazing. Like, I love it. But I watched Whiplash again recently, right? Which great is song. Incredible.
Yeah.
So good. Yeah.
Fantastic.
And it's great, right? But I then, off the back of that, went off to listen to, like, to try and really get into jazz. And I sort of, was trying to go to the albums that were mentioned in the film, and I just couldn't. I didn't know how. This sounds so ignorant. I didn't know how I was supposed to listen to it.
I think
what I mean?
This happens a lot, and I find it very interesting because there's loads of music I don't like, but I don't question myself.
Right.
And I don't like the people that do like. I'm like, why? Jesus, why? And I can't sleep at night. I'm like, oh, something is terribly wrong. I'm like, it's cool. Not everyone likes it.
Existential crisis.
That's a very good point. I mean, that's an excellent point.
You don't know, you're not alone at all.
Yeah.
It's so common. And it might just be that, I don't know, people, it does penetrate popular culture in a lot of senses that people think, oh, it's quite enticing and mysterious. But lots of people don't like it.
I totally agree with what you're saying. Sometimes when you dismiss certain music, it's very easy to dismiss it because you think, I don't think there's any technical proficiency in this, right? I think this music's crap because I don't think you're any good at what you do. I don't think any effort's gone into the songwriting, whatever. Mm. You can't say that about jazz. Sure. Like, you know, you're talking about people that have, particularly when you watch something like Whiplash, you know that level of dedication is pretty common amongst jazz musicians, right? So you sort of go, they obviously are amazing at what they do. And I'm watching somebody like, hit a rhythm on a drum kit and people go, fuck, that is incredible. And I'm just thinking, I want to feel like that about what that guy, do you know what I mean?
But that's like anything, isn't it? I think why Kendrick's album, Tipping the Butterfly, is such an amazing album.
Yeah.
Because it's a perfect gateway into the jazz world in a way that's a bit more palatable.
Got me breathing with dragons. I'll crack the egg in your basket, you bastard. I'm Marilyn Manson with madness. Now just imagine the magic I like to ask is, don't ask for your favorite rapper.
He did.
Yes, sir.
Amen.
Church.
He did.
I killed him.
Amen.
Bitch. And this is rigor mortis, and it's gorgeous when you die. Ali recorded, and I'm Morpheus, the matrix in my mind. I'm out the orbit, you an orphan, and a hairdresser combined. I'm on the toilet when I rhyme. If you the shit, then I decline. I climax where you begin, and then I end on cloud nine. And that's important when you morph into an angel in the sky. And don't be forging all my signatures, my listeners.
I think sometimes it's just taking your time and understanding bit by bit. I mean, like, well, I like that. what's next, what don't I like about this thing, what do I like about the other thing that I liked, and then kind of going from there. It's like anything. I think music is, when it comes to like music like jazz, I think most genres actually, it's like, it's a taste thing. So it's like, the minute you drink a beer when you're, you know, underrated, it tastes horrible. Like, I hate a beer.
You have to force it down.
But you have to, you get the taste, and you start understanding why it's good. And also, you can just be like, that shit. I do a podcast with my friends, and it's called Are We Live? And every episode, we play songs that we like. And a lot of time they play jazz stuff, and I'm like, this is terrible. What on earth? Does it sound like a microwave and someone dying? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not. But
sounds all right, that one. What is that shit?
I mean, not Mr. Wiggle. Not to be pedantic, but it's a bit like hip hop, where you say, I like hip hop, and you're like, well, what does that mean? I hate so much stuff that you might think is jazz, and it's very broad.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, what's a good intro to some contemporary jazz?
Most people go to a record called Kind of Blue by Miles Davis, which is probably one of the best-selling records. It's very, you can put it on and like have a dinner party. But that's like a gateway drug into loads of, the musicians on there all have their own albums, which are incredible.
Who's like a big jazz superstar now, if that's the thing?
Probably Robert Glasper, maybe. Like a superstar. Mm. Like, it's tough, isn't it? Because I think it's a different world.
Yeah.
I'd want to plug my friend, though. Alpha Mist just dropped an album. It's called Bring Backs, and that's incredible album, and that was, I was there for, like, I saw the recording process, and basically, like, he just booked out a studio for a week and recorded it in a week. And that's the album.
I find it really interesting because I was listening to a Roots track on the way here to kind of get into the headspace, and I started you saw the way I walked in.
That hood was that. Extreme because it's very
decaf iced coffee, please. But there's so many similarities there. Like, even the way those two MCs are rapping is this, like, a change in pitch, and they're almost like soloing, and obviously the beats are very jazzy. So I wonder if there's obviously going to be loads of jazz that you would enjoy. Maybe it's the wrong stuff you're listening to.
Yeah. So does that coming into it from jazz, what does that mean for the type of hip hop artists you like, or the type? Because if you talk about East Coast. East Coast is very percussive, you know, it's sort of pretty dense rapping and stuff like that.
That's separate, I suppose, but it's more people like JD and Madlib who would go to record shops and get these dusty old records, and that would be the way you'd get to know all these fantastic records.
Yeah.
But I think, like, so I did a lot of them. Last year I realised I hadn't listened to a lot of classic hip-hop albums, like, before the 90s.
Yeah.
So I went back and listened to, like, Eric B. Rakim, Public Enemies, Yo Mama Rasta Show, and, like, I think Rakim especially, like, he sounds like a jazz musician in terms of the way he raps. It's like a solo. It's like him playing a trumpet. Mm. And I think, like, analysing and seeing it in that way, I think, was just like, wow, like, that is, there's so much similarities
It's so funny when you hear the stories about Rakim. Well, obviously, he totally changed how people rap.
Yeah, right? I think he might be the greatest MC ever.
Yeah, and you hear stories from the engineers, like, that were around at that time, and when they first heard him rapping, they were like, what the fuck is this? Yeah. Like, it doesn't sound like any rapping I've heard before, because he was rhyming inside the lines, like, within the lines or whatever, in a way that hadn't been done before. And, like, I think in terms of, like, a single impact on what rapping is seen to be, he's up there, isn't he?
I genuinely, like, it was like watching a prequel when I went back to the old albums and just hearing how much your favourites, like, if you're a Nas fan and you haven't listened to Rakim, like, what the hell is wrong with you?
Like
Rakim birthed Nas 100%. And then from there that births, you know what I'm saying, Eminem or whoever, and just seeing the lineage of that. But I also feel like someone doesn't get a lot of credit is LL Cool J. I think LL Cool J, in terms of what he was doing at the time,
it's very
easy to look at it now and be like, oh, that's a bit cheesy, that's a little bit whatever, but at the time he's a real, you know,
I think people have a difficult relationship with LL Cool J.
Someone said that if he died, that's horrible, but so if he died in, like, the 90s, he'll be reviewed, he'll be like Biggie and Tupac.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
But basically, because of the kids' films and the board, I don't know, I'll say the board.
Yeah. Was he still doing music?
He did a really terrible song the other time with a country artist speaking about, like, if you don't judge my snapback. He was like,
if you don't judge my snapback,
yeah,
I won't
judge
your
Confederate
cowboy
flag. No, Confederate flag.
Okay, fucking
hell. Oh my God.
That doesn't feel like to me. That's, I'll be honest with you.
I think you missed the mark a little bit. I've got a really good line like this.
Yeah. If you don't judge my baggy jeans, I won't judge your burning cross.
That'll do it. That's a lightning. That's similar. My thing is, yeah. My thing about it is that, do you know how many people must have heard that song before it comes out?
Yeah.
Like, everyone's like, this guy has lost the plot, but he's paying my wages. Oh, yeah.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because I was thinking about, somebody was talking about Ice-T recently. I don't know if, Jack, if you're a fan or, but.
I listened to that as well.
Right. So Rakim, I think you could put Rakim on a track now. Like, you could get him into a studio now and he would drop a verse.
It would be incredible.
It would be great, right? Insane. It would sound current. It would sound like, if. I think Ice-T is a legend. Yeah. Okay, let me just clarify that.
Oh my
but
God.
I haven't really got any desire to hear Ice-T rap now. and the reason for
But I'm there like with you and Jazz. I'm there like, no, I think there must be something in this. yeah, that's really
because Ice-T doesn't. There's no musicality. Oh God, I mean, that sounds really odd. But what I mean is, it's a very old school style of rapping, right? In a way that actually has dated him. Do you know what I mean? And I think even when you hear his more recent stuff, he didn't really ever change that up. Whereas there are certain rappers who've played with it a bit, and listen, I know LL Cool J is not now. Nobody's saying that he's a lyrical pioneer. You could still hear him on a song now and it'd be all right, as long as it wasn't that one.
Yeah, it'll be okay. And I think also, like, longevity-wise, LL Cool J had the 80s, had the 90s, and had the early 2000s. And, like, in all those, he wasn't just an old guy rapping. He was, like, current in when he dropped the stuff.
Yeah.
Early 2000s, so, yeah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This next segment of Hip Hop Saved My Life is brought to you in partnership with Think. So, Rupert, I don't know where this idea came from that you gain any sort of respect or man points for taking even small risks while driving. I mean, have you ever been in a car with an overzealous mate who claims he's allowed to drive like Jenson Button because he thinks he knows the road? I'll be honest, you're not actually thinking this guy's a legend. You're thinking this is just plain dangerous. Like, take Rupert, for example. There is a lot to love about Rupert, it says here. He pays attention to the road, he watches his speed, and he's never tempted to pick up his phone when he gets a notification, mainly because he doesn't get any.
No.
Honestly, I don't know if I'd be able to appreciate him in the same way if he was driving with reckless abandon.
It's one of the nicest things you've ever said about me.
I mean, you've never given me a lift anyway, is the honest truth of it. But today, we are going to be discussing people's bad habits, both on and off the road. And we're going to discuss different habits and decide whether or not they are acceptable. We'll allow Rupert to have some sort of opinion, I imagine. Shall we start?
Yes, please.
Okay.
First habit, eating loudly.
It's a difficult one. Eating loudly in the cinema is no way. Right. And that...
Like an apple or something.
If I was in a cinema and somebody pulled out an apple...
No way. So how about driving faster if you think you know the roads well?
Okay. That is categorically no way. Most of the times I've had an accident has been near my house. And that's because I think you fall into the habit of, you only really click in when you're a little bit further away. So
no way. Next up, stacking the dishwasher badly.
I'm going to say it. Okay. I mean, I'll be honest with you. It's very difficult for me to care about it.
Mm.
Can I just tell you in regards to a sort of a cutlery related bad habit that I have?
Yeah.
If I use a knife like once, I probably would just put it back in the drawer.
How about speeding when you're in a hurry?
That's absolutely no way.
I'm with you on that. That's a no way.
Good. You can't forget the fact that you are essentially driving kind of a lethal weapon.
Mm.
You might get there late. I don't really care about getting to places late. It makes people think you've got a bit of an edge.
Mm. Leaving the fridge door open.
That is absolutely no way. Now I've got children, I understand. Because you are basically rolling the dice on food poisoning.
I was going to say also, they could potentially run into it if they expect it to be open.
When I'm talking about leaving the fridge door open, I'm talking about leaving it ajar. Like, I'm not shutting it. I'm not talking about opening it like that.
That's what I do. My son has boshed his head on the old fridge door a few times. It's a bad just a bad situation. Yeah,
have you got one that says social services?
What about taking your eyes off the road as you pick up the phone?
What possibly? Like, oh, why did you crash your car? It's because I was desperate to watch somebody eat a donut in 3 seconds on TikTok or something like that. That is absolutely 100% no way.
No way.
No way.
Eating in bed.
100%. Okay.
I'm with you on that.
I have woken up with a lot of crumbs in the bed. I once found a Brussels sprout.
One Brussels sprout? Yeah,
I assume I passed it in the night.
Oh, my God. There's loads of sweet corn everywhere.
So, there we have it. Thank you very much for that, Rupert. You've managed to get an entirely comprehensive list of bad habits in there. I appreciate that very much. So, if you take one thing away from this little detour me and Rupert have taken you on this week, I hope that it's quite simply, mates, respect mates who don't take risks when driving. Whether it's watching your speed or ignoring your phone, your mates can tell when you're being a good driver. And put simply, nobody has got time for those mates who put people's safety at risk on the road. And that is why, I promise you, you will go up in the estimations of those around you if you just keep it sensible. Thank you very much.
Hey, man, what's your favorite hip-hop album?
So what would you guys say was your favorite, or one of your favorite hip-hop albums of all time?
Well, I'm going to do a first here. And I'm a fan of the pod, by the way.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, I got a shout out my friend Steve. Shout out to Steve.
Shout out, Steve.
Yeah, we came to your live show, the first one.
Yes, I remember. Yes, yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, I'm going to say a British artist. Have you had a British artist as their favorite album?
Yeah. No,
I don't. We have.
I think so.
It's a Boy in the Corner, Dizzy Rascal. So I don't know if that is classed as hip hop.
No, we'll accept that. We'll accept. Oh, well, we have to, otherwise it gets very awkward. but yeah, no, I accept that.
I think Boy in the Corner as a record is arguably one of the most important to ever come out from the UK.
Looks like I'm losing friends. There's a lot of hostility in my ends. We used to argue, always make up and be friends. Now we settle disagreements with the gang. Yes. Looks like I'm losing mates. There's a lot of hostility near my gates. We used to fight with kids from other estates. Now 8mm settle debates. Woo! Looks like I'm losing sight, cause I'm looking at the future, it ain't bright. So I look out my window and pray every night. I thank God for my friends, but they ain't tired. Yep. Looks like I'm losing hope, cause I climb this mountain without rope. But I know I'm the captain of my boat, so I steadily sail and hope not to fall. But it's a brand new day with new opportunities. What can I say?
I think you can hear his influences, like a Rakim. You can hear his influences in all the current, you know, MCs or whatever.
Well,
from here.
A lot of the things that we said about Rakim, you could apply to him. You know, in terms of like when he first came out, I'd never heard, and production-wise, as well as his rapping, never heard anything like that at all. To the point where I first heard one of his records, it's like that. And I mean this in a good way. You're just like, what the fuck is 100%. This, man? Like, I've never heard anything.
You can't intellectualize this.
No, exactly.
So you can't like go to school and learn how to do that.
No, it's just so different from anything I'd heard before. And actually, we had Bun B on the podcast, and he was talking about how like he's friends with Dizzy. And he said, like, when I think it was Bonkers, like he was at a festival and he saw Dizzy come out and perform Bonkers, and he's like, I've never seen anything like this. Like the response to that. And I know that he's had a massive career. I still don't think that he gets the credit he deserves. I think in terms of like you said, I mean, I'll be repeating what you said, Barney, like the way he changed things up, how different he sounded, it's incredible.
It's another example of if he disappeared after that record, he would probably be
spot on.
Yeah. This happens all the time. I find it really interesting.
I think that's about that, isn't it? It's like longevity and stuff.
There's just something magical about that first thing you do when you don't really know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And then you become successful and you become sometimes like better at your craft as well. But is that a good thing? Like you do intellectualize things and you think, oh, what shall I do with this song? Rather than just being like there's all these stories about how he made it on his PlayStation. He probably didn't do that for his third record.
what's even more awkward though, I suppose, is like if it doesn't go, you know what I'm saying? So he drops the first album that does well, like critically acclaimed. Second album doesn't do as well. Third album, and then he just has a massive thing with like Bonkers and Holiday and all that kind of stuff. Mm. But then I suppose at the same time, sort of, kind of not voids the first album, but you don't look at Dizzy Rascal as the pioneer anymore.
Yeah.
And so then later on, he decides to make albums that are similar to the first album.
Yeah.
And I'm like, as an artist, do you try and go back? Because you'll never be able to recapture You'll never be able to recapture that element and that feel of you being 17, 18. Mm. It will just never happen. You are a grown up.
But I think, like, you know, as soon as you've done, when you do your first thing, like exactly what you said, you're not thinking about it. You're just doing the thing that you think is good. And then when you do your second thing, whatever, your second album, you're thinking, do I push on and do and progress, or do I try and emulate what I did before? As soon as you're having that thought, you've got a problem. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? That is the truth of it. Because it's this extra degree of consideration that might just dull the purity of what you're trying to make, right? Well,
yeah, like longevity. I think longevity in itself in hip-hop is something that's a concern for me. Like, I feel like there's just not enough longevity within hip-hop. It feels like you've got about a good 18 months when you're on top.
So why do you think that? Have you thought about why that might
be? I think that first of all, hip-hop started as a youth. It's a youthful genre. Sure. Do you know what I'm saying? It's about being cutting edge. It's about understanding the lingo and being a reporter of what's happening around you. And the issue is that when success happens, when you make music, it usually happens in arrears. So you're making an album. That album will come out next year.
Yeah.
Then that album, you make another album that comes out and you've got to tour that album.
Yeah.
So by the time you make another album, you're already, you know, it's difficult to be on top of the current, right? Trying to be floating because you made the album last year.
Yeah.
So that's number one. Number two, I think that it takes a lot of guts to do something different and for it to work. I think one of the best examples I can see of that is obviously like a Kendrick Lamar, a Kanye, and over here, I think like Kano. I think Kano, I'm like the biggest, like embarrassing how, like, it's really, like, it's embarrassing.
His consistency,
But like, he went away, like, you know, Home Sweet Home, London Town, and then, you know, he had this kind of third album that wasn't as good and was a little bit weird, and he went away for like 5 years.
Yeah, that's what he said, didn't he?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And so to come back and drop Made in the Manor and then drop Hoodies All Summer and become an artist that is not acting like he's 15.
Yeah, yeah.
He's acting like he's a, you know, mid-30s rapper, but making it accessible for me is a sign of a great artist. And I think that's what's missing in hip-hop.
But also equally going against the grain for how people are making 100% music now, right? Because when we had him on the podcast, he was saying that he wanted to make something that would stand the test of time.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, like, a lot of people don't give a shit about, well, not they don't give a shit about that. That has become deprioritized because of the way that we're consuming music. I think it was you that was, I think you may have done a post about, you know, the way that people listen to albums when they skip to the middle of the tune, for each, that you, and you said, you're absolutely disgusting, you need to stop this, right?
Well, shuffle.
It's like listening to watching a film in shuffle. Like, you can't. But I think that's the issue, is that people aren't making, what I find mad, and I don't want to go on a tirade about streaming companies, but, you know, it's, people are now making music to get on playlists, right? So the actual sound of music is being changed by tech companies, because it's like, I can't have a long intro because people are going to skip, and the algorithm will now know that I don't want to do it. So what's happening is that music is changing, and music is changing where making an album isn't necessarily the most viable thing to do, really.
Yeah.
You want to have an album full of singles. That's going to do better in terms of display, and I think that's what's going to start to kill the album, is because the consumption of music is people just,
well, there's always when we talk about stuff like this, we're talking about pop music, and we still can have some faith in underground music and stuff that we all love.
I disagree. I feel like underground music is now popular because of the internet. I feel like there's like the disparity in the distance between the two now isn't as
people will react and be more inclined to make albums because as a reaction to all this, surely.
I agree, but I think it's the idea of, look, we're arguing already. I think it's the...
It's good. But basically, the aim of this was to turn you to against each other. This is working exactly as you planned.
The launch is not happening.
Dance puppets.
I do think that, like, we have to remember that, like, a lot of the time, kids are the ones that push culture forward when it comes to, like, the new sound. So if they're consuming music in this capacity, it's going to have an effect on how it happens, and it's kind of like a spiral. So if you look at The Roots, or if you look at Tribe Called Quest, or if you look at all these guys, they started really young, and then it perpetuates, and then they inspire the next one, and that inspires the next one. But where it is right now is that even the underground artists are looking at streaming numbers, are looking at how many views they get on YouTube, and then with that, it then influences the way that they make music. And so there will be artists that want to make albums, but I just think viability, it's going to be really difficult for them to carry on doing.
So there's less patience, sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, the guy from Spotify said that, like, you know, just make more. If you want to make more money, just make more music and put that out
quickly.
And that was what his message was to the people. Right?
Wow. Didn't say that out loud.
So yours is Dizzy Rascal. What about you, Jack? Have you got a favourite?
I think this is just the one I've listened to the most, I think, but it's Gangstar. No, it's
the other blacks. It's
The Infamous by Mobb Mobb Deep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, good shout.
That's a great shout.
Sorry, I wrote a whole list in that. Yeah.
You can have a couple.
Yeah. That's just like, it always transported me.
Do you want to distance yourself from the gangster? Yeah.
We can edit.
Do you know what it's like? It's like, I was just actually introducing Mobb Deep. It's a bit like you went gangster. Oh, fuck, I don't want to be known for liking gangster. Not gangster.
I was giving Mobb Deep a little introduction.
Yeah.
The gangsters, Mobb Deep. That's just how I say it.
Yeah. So sorry, Mobb Deep, go on.
Yeah, it's just, I think on tour, like whenever we were in New York, I'd play that record and just walk around, and I'd been like dreaming of that moment when I was young for so long. It's just this magical experience because, like all good music, it just transported me somewhere else.
Yeah.
I can't think of a record that does that better for me.
There's a war going on outside, no man is safe from. You could run, but you can't hide forever from these streets that we done took. You walking with your head down, scared to look. You shook, cause ain't no such things as halfway crooks. They never around when the beef cooks. In my part of town, it's similar to Vietnam. Now we all grown up and old and beyond the cops' control. They better have the riot gear ready, trying to back me and get rock steady. By the Mac 1 double, I touch you and leave you with not much to go home with.
The really interesting thing about Mobb Deep, and it's something I hadn't really thought about when I listened, you know, when I first got into them or whatever, is that, you know, Prodigy, he was such a great rapper, right? Such a great rapper. But it's not like if you looked at his written, you know, if you take a Nas verse and you look at that written down, you go, holy fucking shit. Like, this is like, there's so much imagery here. It's so like the metaphor, all of that, you know, all of the typical things that rap nerds like to look for in a verse. Nas has got that. Prodigy doesn't have that really, right? He's not particularly quotable. I mean, he's quotable in a way, like, but you're not talking about lyrical wizardry, but there is just something about his voice, his frame of reference, his angle that just makes him undeniable. Do you know what I mean? Like, I could listen to him forever, right? And it's like, and it's that thing, it's not a skill thing, it's actually an intangible thing about Prodigy. And it's something that I've only sort of appreciated more later on as I was into hip-hop, because when you start getting into hip-hop, everybody's talking about, I want somebody who can spit the multi-syllabics and all that shit. I know I talk about that all
the
time.
I'm the opposite, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So but there's something, it's a musical quality to his voice.
Exactly,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's something different, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like just one piece of the puzzle. Like that, all those elements came together with that record of like how dark and gritty the beats were with the lyrics. And like you say, it's not very like clever.
Yeah,
his lyrics, but that's almost what I love about it. It's just, it like gets this imagery across in a simple way,
which is
harder to do.
To be able to resonate with simplicity is one of the most difficult things to do. So like if you look at like a Kanye, the reason why Kanye is incredible is because of that thing, same thing as well. The first few albums, he's literally saying things that you understand, that resonates with you, that also will stick in your brain. And I think that as a rapper, like, that's the golden, that's what you want.
Yeah.
Like, not everyone is able to do that.
So when you're writing, Barney, you can't go, I'm going to try and make this thing. Like, because I from a comedy point of view, I'll watch like somebody like a Chappelle or a Bill Burr or something like that, and I think to myself, right, I'm going to go write some stand-up. It's going to be fucking amazing, right? And then I go and
Gary.
microphone just talking to the wall. But then, like, what'll happen is actually it's crippling because I'll write a bit and then I look at it and I go, this ain't fucking good enough.
Yeah.
And then I'll get rid of it. And then actually, what happens is it's creatively completely stifling.
Mm.
You have to sort of turn off your editor. You know what I mean?
Do
you find, like, how do you find that kind of process?
I think rap is like, it's definitely a muscle. So I think you definitely have to work at it. I think I write pretty much, you know, every other day at least, just to get it out. And I think it's about, you know, someone's talking about the idea of songwriting. And, you know, it's like having a rusty tap in an old house. You know, at the first, when you turn that tap on,
you sort of gesture to Jack there as if he's got a home machine.
Why did I make you think of a rusty old house?
Yeah, that's weird.
It's your house, I think.
You know, like at your shit house.
Yeah.
No, you're terrible now. No, because we watched the Ed Sheeran thing together, and it's Ed Sheeran actually that said
right.
it. But yeah, you go to an old house with a tap there, you turn it on, and mud will come out when you like, starts coming out, like, mud and shit. But the longer you leave it running, less mud comes out and more water comes out. And I think that's like anything when it comes to songwriting. I think when it comes to rapping, the more you write, just in general, the more you're gonna have the skill set. So when inspiration does hit, you know what to do with the like you have the tool set to know what to do. And
I think
that's what I kind of treat it as. I do sometimes go, okay, how do I make something connect? Like, and a lot of the time I rap about like my life and like my family and stuff like that and relationships, which can be awkward because somebody, you know, messaged you and being like, hey, is that second verse about me?
Yeah.
And you go, yeah, awkward. But yeah, no, I think it's, for me, it's my, I do work at that, those elements, you know, you want to work at tone, you want to work at flow, you want to work at da-da-da-da and be able to kind of hopefully find your own voice in that.
Do you have an input into that, Jack? Into what Barney's doing with that vocal and stuff like that when you're?
I think I'm more of an editor,
right?
And that was quite a new experience for Barney.
So you'd listen to him do a verse, and then what? You would you give him feedback?
Yeah, not so much on the lyrics, but
it's even worse, mate. He's literally a supply teacher.
Like, my big thing is space. I think it's the hardest thing to incorporate into what you're doing. It's like we all just want to be getting it all out and being a bit of a blabbermouth. And as a listener, sometimes you kind of need those little bits. And I've always come back to like jazz, but it's the same with a solo. Like, the hardest thing to do is to leave these little gaps in between your notes, and they need to breathe.
Tell him what you used to make me do. It was like coursework. I had to send my lyrics over to him and I'd have them on the screen.
Wow.
And I would go through them.
That's good.
Yeah, no, I think that one, and I'm just there like...
And every time he didn't know, he'd hit you with a ruler.
Think about the money. No, but it was an amazing lesson in terms of like... But then I think on the flip side, Jack learned a lot about rap in a different format and the way, and rhyming on different, you know, lines and rhyming in the line.
And structuring a beat around an MC, because I'd never worked, you know, I'd always just made my instrumental hip-hop CDs for my girlfriend.
Sure. When you were really just on the smash.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
I know, but then there was one time where, there's one song on the album where Jack's just singing the whole thing. And that was my favorite day in the studio, because basically we wrote the song together.
Right.
And I got to just sit back and just
print out my lyrics.
I was like, I don't like the word the.
Yeah.
Change the word the.
Just doing it for the sake of it.
Jack, it was really good, but have you heard of space?
I find it really interesting. Like, I do think all good art could do with editing. I don't know how you guys work if someone else gets to look over stuff and... I always think someone who isn't in your head and so involved in it.
That separation.
And we have a romantic view of how we make our art, and it's like the, you know, it's all just one person. But
in terms of writing, I think like to distance yourself from the thing you've created is one of the most useful things you can do, because you have to be in a place where somebody can say what you've just done isn't good or needs improvement, and that has to not emotionally affect you at all.
Sure.
And to get to that point is so difficult, but so essential. Yeah. Like, it's just...
Do you have key people that like will watch your, you know, the work in progress stuff?
I've got like friends who I'll either talk through an idea with, or they'll come and watch me at a gig, and I'm able to listen to them say to me.
How
I
soon think that's after bit... the show can they tell you how shit it was?
Straight after.
Walk out.
Yeah. The number of gigs that have been ruined.
This is shit.
Straight away, man.
Seriously,
it was hard. Like, to get to that point, because comedy, like rapping, like music generally, is so personal. And you put so much of yourself into it, then somebody says, I don't think that was good. And it feels like they're going, I don't think you're good. Do you know what I mean? And so you have to sort of be able to distance yourself from that. But the truth is like you have to be prepared to be sort of uncomfortable. But now it doesn't register with me. That's not true. I am able to take that and not be bothered.
But is that because of you having success, though? Is that because of you having success? Because I'm really fascinated by the idea of like, I was watching, there's like a really good documentary on BBC called Hip Hop Songs That Shook America. It's incredible. Right. But they'd like look at each song and like dive into it. And one of them was on Kanye.
Right.
And Jesus Walks. And I was talking about Kanye before he was famous. And him like standing on tables telling everyone, I'm going to be the biggest rapper in the world. And how he was insane. But then the success came and then he's now a genius.
Yeah.
So do you think that success then make somebody then deemed as a genius? And the idea of like genius and insane is like a really fine line. So I'm going with you and your confidence in your art. Do you think that because you have found success, that therefore you are less unsure about you as an entity.
No, but I'm riddled with self-doubt, you know, like that is the truth of it. But I think, like, I'm so paranoid about becoming, in the same way that we all are, so paranoid about becoming stagnant that you sort of think, if I get to a point where I'm not willing to listen to somebody telling me that this thing could be better, then that's when I'm going to start to decline. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I think you have to just sort of go, oh, you have to accept that. Do you know what I mean? I think, you know, I actually think in a way, listening to, seeing hip rappers sort of fall off or become less, that has sort of, you sort of learn lessons from that in a way. Yeah. So I think I've got to be prepared to sort of accept the fact that if I do a show and somebody comes up to me and says, I just don't think any of that worked, or, you know, it was really brute one, or it was really bad, like, obvious or whatever. You have to be prepared to sort of take that on.
It links back to us talking about the first album syndrome and why there's so many groundbreaking debuts and then later in life becomes a bit bland, maybe.
Yeah.
People like to surround themselves with sycophants.
Yeah.
I mean, not everyone. This just happens quite regularly, though. It happens
a lot.
It feels good. Yeah. It feels nice to be told you're amazing.
The people in the room are all yes people. So these records you're making with the success you've had are all just people like, oh, it's amazing. Oh, it's great. And what you're doing is really sort of generic and mediocre.
Yeah.
But I think that's where
it felt like you were directing that right.
Looking at Rob. I was playing at Rob.
What you're doing is very generic and mediocre.
But those people must have some awareness that it has got a bit shit, though, surely.
The issue is that when you're making an album or making music, there's a part of you that thinks this could be shit at every point. There's the whole process. So what's tough is that when you drop the song and people are going, that first, I don't know about you, Jack, that first hour when something new's out, you're going, is it good? Hopefully it's good. I really hope it's good. And then people say it's good or it's bad. And I think, but that making process, every artist, every person has the most difficult.
Whatever level of success.
100%. You go, well, I don't know. Is it good? I hope it's good. I think it's good. But you've listened to a song how many millions of times?
But then there's that thing, isn't it, of like, you know, you think about, so let's take Kanye, for example. Yeah. We're always banging about Kanye, but with good reason.
Yeah.
But like the guts that he has demonstrated to bring out a record that's so different from the previous one he did, or you have to be slightly mad. Do you know what I mean? To have that level of self-belief. Because I could imagine him going, okay, so this is the new one. He puts it on in front of the people that are in charge of that coming out. And they just sit there. Like the first time they heard, the first time they heard Jesus, just like,
I look at the engineers, like, something happened to the wire, is it unplugged? Like,
so obviously there's some polishing to do on this, right? No, anyway, this is the actual thing.
Every artist ever, when they're playing new music, says, disclaimer, this hasn't been mixed.
Roughly mastered.
So that's going to change anything. There's going to be new raps in there.
Yeah. Like, that will actually have melody.
I might solo over this next bit.
But no, I think also a perfect example of that is Kendrick. I think Kendrick, in terms of, you know, I think if Kendrick drops another classic, I think he's arguably top five ever. And I think that's how insane it is, because the run of albums that he's had.
It's ridiculous.
We haven't seen this at this level before.
Yeah.
Maybe Kanye. That's the only person I can really think of that's kind of like album, classic. Like, that is, you know.
Well, why is that different to someone like Drake?
I love Drake, first of all. I think he gets a bad rap.
Hey.
I think Drake is the epitome of this generation when it comes to releasing of music and the consumption of
music.
Turning
it around faster,
which is literally, you can't. So a Kendrick and a J. Cole can go away and, you know, do whatever. Drake literally cannot. He has to be in people's faces constantly.
Yeah.
And whether that's jumping on new songs, whatever, that takes so much hard work.
Yeah, yeah.
But also the idea of being current is such a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
But I think, like, it's a shame. But I don't think he'll be remembered as a top 10.
You don't think so?
No, unfortunately. It hurts me because I'm a massive Drake fan, but I think the ghostwriting thing really hurt him. I think that thing really put a chink in his armor. But I think the moves that he made in terms of how frequent he puts music out and the type of music that he puts out, which is genreless, you can do anything. I think that kind of worked a little bit against him in the consideration of having, you know, being top 10, which is tough.
So we said we were going to talk about it. So live hip hop. Have you seen much live hip hop?
Not a whole lot. I've got one, like, very fond memory of seeing a group called Binary Star in South by Southwest.
Right.
Yo, this is how I represent. I rock the mic 110%. It's intimate. I keep the party moving like an immigrant. Binary star, superstar. It's no coincidence. Every verse is intricate. This ain't a circus in a tent. We don't get down like them clowns in the Kents. I'm used to being indigent. Who said it's all about the Benjamins? I want a fortune. I want to make music and hit the lottery. Fortunately, my music is never watery. That's how it gotta be as far as I can see. Maybe you should grab a telescope to see my view is like astronomy. It ain't all about economy. So the fact that all these whack MCs...
That's the most embarrassing... Like, I really hope no one was filming me, because I was that guy at the front with, like, my Nokia phone, like, every word, and just really annoying everyone, I think.
That's amazing. That's so not like Jack, by the way. He's not a singer out loud.
No, I've already got that vibe. but you lost it.
Completely, yeah. I mean, that was... There was just this one track they had that, for, like... Ever since I started listening to hip-hop, I knew every single word and was obsessed with
it. Is there a snobbish... You can tell us as somebody coming from elsewhere... I don't mean geographically. is there a snobbishness from other genres towards like hip hop? Did you come into it with a perception that hip hop doesn't take live performance as seriously?
I don't think so at all.
No.
I think there's something stuck with me when I was young and I was playing like some music at a party and someone went, "Oh, we're listening to hip hop. Feel like I'm at uni again or something." And I was like, "What the hell does that mean?"
They were racist.
I really didn't understand that. But no, I'd like to say I don't see much hip-hop because I just don't see much live music.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure maybe you're the same way as when it's your job, you kind of...
It ruins everything.
You don't tend to go out and see as much stuff.
No, I don't want to see what these other fucking people
Definitely not.
what about you, Barney?
I've seen a lot of hip-hop shows. Mm. I think, kind of like I was saying earlier, I think there's just a lack of preparation.
Mm.
Like, rapping is an incredible thing, but like, it's not like singing where the skill set is your tone and your range.
Right.
Rapping is the words you put together.
Yeah.
So watching somebody pace up and down the stage, holding the mic terribly, and kind of just like aggressively pointing at people isn't inclusive. You're kind of watching like that. You're like, oh, this is...
Mm.
Also, a lot of people feel really self-conscious about the idea of being cool. Like, if you're at a show, I don't want to put my hands in the air because I don't feel cool. Like, I don't want people to feel like it's awkward.
Mm. Yeah.
So I think, there are some incredible, acts that I've seen that I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
Kano Kendrick was a couple that I've seen. I think Kendrick's show at O2 was incredible.
Yeah.
Kano at Royal Albert Hall, amazing. But... I think, the majority of it, I think it's just being able to push boundaries. I think Little Sims is amazing. Like, her live show is incredible as well. Hip-hop is it's just tough because you have to understand a lot of these guys, they weren't rapping expecting to then have to rap in front of people.
Yeah,
sure.
Do you get what I'm saying? And, and that's a skill. It's a different skill set. Breath control, movement, knowing when to say things, knowing not when to say things, all that kind of stuff.
But we are at a point where, I remember, for example, The Roots, before they became Fallon's house band, they were saying, touring was how they were making their living because people weren't buying music. Do you know what I mean?
It'd be, it's 250 days of the year they were on tour.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So that had to be... They had to... they've always been amazing live, but that became a thing they had to rely on more. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And, you sort of think... You look at Kendrick, that Kendrick show was incredible and he's playing to huge numbers... But imagine if you'd have gone to see Kendrick do that show and he'd have done it like a regular fucking rap show. Like, how gutting that would have been. I feel embarrassed for the genre when something like that happens, because I'll often, you must feel, you bring in friends and you go, I mean, it was me and Rupert there, so it wasn't friends. It's but you take your friends to a gig and you're like, I think this group or this person's amazing. And then you watch it and you go, oh my God.
They're like, so rubbish! We see you start to rubbish in the ground with the lovely lady.
Oh, shit. Well, look, guys, we're almost out of time here.
But, oh, man.
I know. It's been great, haven't it? Best guest.
Best first two guests. First double.
What? First, you've never fucked that up before. That is... I'm embarrassed.
Best first double of the guests.
First ever double act and best ever double act. and best guest.
Right, okay, how's good, that? Good. Don't look to me for approval.
Well, you were just guiding me through it with your eyes. Yeah.
Just little, like a little supportive parent. What are you listening to at the moment? What are you listening to at the moment? That was very this morning, wasn't it?
So, guys.
Spotify.
I'm listening to... There's an amazing artist called Lexa Moore, and she has an album called Government Tropicana. That's amazing.
Man, see me in my internet and my slippers. See my penny slap the counter and form figures. Even when the block made me and these neat ass socks, didn't take a lot to know the Glock was a 9mm. Go figure, Excalibur, the pen wicked. And you mean cut vicious if the pen hit it. Cheese and bread, no regret, shall know my jiggers. Biff, chip and kip, I knew that I differ from my height. Dog on the path from dinners was a smash pack of mash, mama. I'm from a little bit.
I'd highly recommend you to listen to it.
Okay, that's a Barney recommendation.
I think J. Cole's new album is really good. But you know, before we go, because I know we're wrapping up, I've got to just tell an amazing story about Rom.
Okay.
So I've said it earlier before outside. He doesn't know what I'm going to say here. Okay. So I came to your. You guys did a thing.
Is this bad or good?
It's incredible.
We want to go out on a high.
Yeah, no, 100%. So you guys did something at Moth Club for Sky.
Yes.
You guys probably don't remember. Rupert
that was. You were there. Romish and friends.
Yeah.
You were there.
Yeah, I was there. Yeah.
Sick. So I bought tickets, or I think it was free, but I went and it was a date, right? A lovely young lady. We don't speak anymore, but you know, we're here. But
exactly how you wanted it to work out.
Good how day, we love it. How we want it, baby.
That's how players play.
Woo! No phone calls back. Didn't hear anything again. Ooh, raps lifestyle, right? I'm on this date with this girl. And we're chilling. It's a good night, whatever.
Do you know this story, Jack?
No, never heard of it. So, basically, I was like, Rom, I know Rom. Oh, really? I was like, yeah, cool. So, basically, I've gone to the top. You've finished the show. I've seen you. And I'm like, Rom, I'm with a girl that's a massive fan of you.
Yeah.
Can you pretend?
I remember this, yeah.
Can you big me up in front of the girl?
Rom-ish, I can't believe you did that.
Rom-ish, that's amazing.
Rom, that's even blink, not even a bat in an eyelid. He goes, so the girl walks out and he goes, yo, Barney!
Amazing.
Woo! Yo, player!
Mid-show.
Oh, my God, bro. Oh, it's so good to see. Oh, my, I can't believe you're here.
Some
oh,
of
my
his
God.
Best acting.
Oh, my, bro, literally Oscar-worthy, right?
BAFTA
winner. You are so amazing. Oh, my God, it's Barney. Oh, yo. Oh,
all that charity work you've been doing, man.
You're like the best charity guy. Oh, and the rapping. Oh, man. I'm so happy to see you, man. Bro, we got to link up on that thing that we're going to do. And I'm there this is amazing. And the girl's like this. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, oh, bro, man, make sure you call me after this thing, man. I'm going to shout you later. And then walks upstairs. And
why you keep forgetting to bring me back,
yeah,
man?
Yeah, exactly. Listen, man, I know you're busy, man, but we got to connect. And that was one of the best.
She didn't see through that.
I mean, honestly, it was the most amazing thing ever. So yeah, I want to say thank you on air.
But you're not together.
We're not, no. The sentiment that you delivered is something that I always remember. So thank you very much.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome.
Really appreciate it.
Romish is available for other dates.
If you want me to pretend to give
a weird version, a real life version of cameo.
I'm happy to pretend to give a shit about you in different contexts. Jack, we'll let you. What are you listening to at the moment?
Apart from my instrumental,
when you fancy an hour of just sort of solo masturbation. Stick that up.
I wanted to see United masturbation. Yeah, yeah. That's what
It's a bit of a throwback. But,
yeah, go on.
Task Force.
Oh, really?
I've been rediscovering all their records.
Oh, yeah.
It's a bit of a nostalgia fest for me, but a lot of the music I listen to these days seems to be like that. So.
Yeah.
A song called Cosmic Gypsies with Jest and Brain Tax.
I'm the spaceman type, chewing meteoric porridge. The asteroid arsenal's beefing up my courage. The lunar base burglars, sunspots burn you up. I'll be shooting stars at Mars, the planet murderer. My spaceship's flying. A red dwarf alliance, drying up the Milky Way's galactic pirates. Sub-dial astronaut, my mind can't be rescued. I sniff stardust, manufactured off Neptune. I'm the cosmic gypsy, tipsy from plutonium whiskey. This freaky alien from Pluto gives me my soldiers from the solar.
Jess is probably one of the best rappers.
Jess.
I just haven't heard it in so long.
But he's still amazing. He's done solo pitch 92, and it's insane. it's his pockets for me, and it's his like tone. It's just,
yeah.
Like, it's just a shame that the internet wasn't around.
I know.
Just. Mm, I know. You know what I'm saying? They just missed the internet.
I just, because we had, obviously, as you know, we had Jess on the podcast ages ago, and I just thought this guy should be filled with much more rage than he is, because he's one of the greats, man. He's
no, like easily one of the greats.
Yeah, he's amazing.
And influenced so many people.
Yeah. Listen, guys, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast.
Thank you.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Yeah.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time.
Yeah, buy our album.
Yeah.
That's good. Where? Cheers, Rom. From the end of the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Album. Where can we buy this album?
When's it out?
When's it out, yeah. It might be out.
2nd of July. 2nd of July, yeah, our album's
it's out now. It's called By the Time This Comes Out.
Yes, it's out now.
When? What's the best way to support The Locket as a consumer?
Great, there he is. Mm. That's what we... There we are. There
we are. It's our merch page, isn't it?
Yeah, merch. I think, like, yeah, just buying.
Direct from the artist.
Or coming to see us live. We're on tour as well in August.
Okay, so go... Listen, go see him. You can listen to the record.
Yeah.
On streaming services.
But if you actually, you guys have heard, right?
Yeah,
it's incredible.
But if you actually want to support The Locket,
yeah,
go to the website, yeah, buy the merch, yeah, go see him live. That's how you support artists.
Look at that.
Do we know the website?
www.support.
We'll you didn't even get the correct number of W's. That was the saddest thing about
www. VW.
We'll put a link in the description.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Just Google us.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.